This is our first time recording since the news broke, but congratulations to you and yours. Taylor owns her Masters.
I saw!
And everything. So I'm wearing my Reputation shirt. And because the last time we talked about this, you were like, when is Reputation TV coming? Guess what, girl?
Yeah. So it's not coming then.
Let's do an after party and I'll walk through it.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
But yeah, she basically said like there will be no Reputation. There will just be Explanation, which is the reverse from what she said before.
Oh my God.
But no, it's all very exciting. She owns her Masters. It's a major, major thing for artists everywhere. The music industry has been changed forever. It's like a really, really, really big deal. So everyone go listen to whatever the hell you want to listen to with a clear
yay.
Head.
Oh
yay, Taylor.
God.
Congrats, girl.
Hi, Jillian Benzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Today we're doing Web of Death, season one, episode 16. It's called Body of Evidence. And my note is that it's Body of Evidence sounds like a Kim Basinger movie from like the 90s.
Wasn't it like a Madonna movie? Wasn't it? Body of Evidence. Hell yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes, wasn't it?
Wasn't there also like Boxing Helena? It was like a weird sex movie where they cut some woman up or something in like a box.
What are you talking about? I don't know. Body of Evidence was in, I was right, a 1993 thriller mystery starring Madonna, Willem Dafoe, Julianne Moore.
What? Julianne Moore and Madonna together at last together
and like
forever.
A sexy thriller?
Oh my God.
I know what
God.
I'm watching later.
Amazing.
1993, like sex thriller.
Is there like a theme song? Take a vow.
Maybe it was. Was it like Secret or something?
Oh,
when did Secret
maybe.
Come out? 93,
oh my God.
That's too early.
This is the gayest intro we've ever done.
Welcome.
I'm so into it. I would ask you what we're talking about today, but I just said it.
Yeah, so this is our bonus episodes that
yes.
we drop in. And this is the last episode of Web of Death. It's a really good show. It's really victim focused.
Do we do all six?
Yeah, we did all six. So,
wow.
I mean, make a second season, I guess.
I love it because we don't see this style anywhere else, where we are seeing the mystery and the resolution at the same time.
Yeah, it's really, I think they're really interesting stories that need to be told, and it's super victim focused. I like the series, so
yeah,
I hope there's more.
In the opening, we get to see Bob Ruff every time, like in the credits. I love that. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Bob.
I feel that nobody helps these souls that are lost out there, and somebody's got to do it. Why can't that somebody be me?
Shocking. In 30 plus years, never come across something like this. And I hope the good Lord never lets me do that again.
His entire life went missing. Everything he owned, down to his toothbrush.
There was a stain found on the cup.
And that's when we immediately knew something was terribly wrong.
I was obsessed with finding this person.
There are just so many places to hide a body. Where do you begin to look?
This was one that I had to solve.
Right at the top, we meet Ellen Lynch. She lives in Gulfport, Mississippi. She's been there since 2001. She met this guy, Chip, online. Now, I am not primed to like just like straight guys off the bat. I love Chip.
No, we like Chip.
I love him.
They met online. Also, Loki is their dog. They have two cats. Do we ever see the animals? No. Hi, friends. Loving you. Chip says that Ellen is, quote, a girl to ride the river with.
What the hell does that mean?
I think that means she's like a ride or die. She's like, she's your bestie, but she's like a good partner.
And they love each other. Like, I think that, like, we're gonna learn that when Ellen is, like, investigating these, because she's, like, an internet sleuth. She's, like, an amateur internet sleuth. And when she gets her teeth into something, I think he doesn't see her for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
You know?
Because he says, like, she has a good heart. He goes, I couldn't want anything else. They just love each other.
I think he, like,
animals.
Makes her dinners and, like, leaves them outside the door for her to eat whenever she's ready.
Nice job, Chip. We love that.
I mean,
we love Chip.
Absolutely.
So it's 1994. This is crazy. Just stay with me as I unpack it, because I also have, like,
this was shocking.
PCO-related news.
It was shocking to me.
So Ellen gets a call from her mother saying that Ellen's cousin's boys were missing, Michael and Alex, that these two little boys were taken.
Federal authorities have launched a nationwide search for a carjacker. According to his victim, he not only stole her car, he stole her children too.
The mother, Susan, told the police that a black man had kidnapped her kids and hijacked the car.
The mother of Michael and Alex, the little boys who were taken, goes on the news and is like, oh, a black guy stole my car and my kids. And she's lying.
She's lying.
Now, the mother...
I was like, wait, this sounds really familiar.
So she's immediately arrested and charged with the murder of the two kids because she ends up confessing.
Yes.
This is the Susan Smith case. This is a very famous case. She's in prison for life. Of course, she, like, had to blame it on this, like, scary black guy. Like, Susan, shut up.
Outrageous.
I found a doc. We're doing it on the regular feed. It's already on the calendar.
Oh, we are. Okay. I was... How have we now... I thought this was going to be about the Susan Smith case.
I thought so, too. And it wasn't. Get in the middle. I paused it, found the doc, put it on the cal. I got you. So.
Oh, amazing. All right, good.
Be warned, though, we will say it at the top. It's an incredibly hard story. This is a mother who killed her kids.
Who kills her own kids.
And then, like, tries to frame it on a black eye. Like, yeah, it's really bad, but
not since, like, Chris Watts, where, like, we learn what the little kid said before. It's horrible.
I'm just telling you now.
Yeah.
So, if you want to skip it, whatever, if you want to just get yourself prepared, fine. So that, but Ellen says this devastated her whole family, but this is how I started sleuthing.
Yeah.
To like find the truth.
It's weird that the Susan Smith case is a footnote in this story.
That's why I was like, we've got to find the doc about it.
For sure.
So we're going to
She says, like, when she was searching for the boys, she stumbled across the Doe Network, and she said it had missing persons and unidentified bodies. And Todd Matthews is here. He's the director of the Doe Network.
Yes. What a head of hair on this guy.
Oh my God. This guy, I was like, do I like him? Do I not like him? I like this guy. Head of hair for days. He says,
he's such a character.
Such a character. And he's like the gatekeeper of the Doe, because the Doe Network is primarily used by these internet sleuths, right? So imagine like dealing with those people all day long.
I mean,
you know,
for better or worse.
For better. That's what I mean. Like, some are great. Some are really difficult. I can't imagine you're the point person between the people on the internet trying to solve crimes.
It's a lot. And then going through all that information, it's like a lot. So Ellen sees this website and she can't believe it.
Because for every Ellen, there's got to be 100 not Ellens.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
So she's like, oh my God. Like, she kind of can't believe what she's seeing. There's so many cases, so many missing people. All she doesn't feel overwhelmed. She feels inspired. She can't wait to get to work.
And she's saying, because of her experience with Susan Smith, her cousin's wife and the kids, she says, like, looking at all these unsolved cases, looking at all these unclaimed bodies, she knows how those families must feel, and she knows she has to help them.
And she wants the harder cases. She goes, I want the ones that people don't really want to look at or feel like there's nothing there. Like, those are the cases she wants.
Yeah. Travel down the road, back again. Girl, Miracle Maid is back. Look, and not a minute too soon, right? It's getting hot out there, and your nighttime bedroom temperature, we all know this, has a huge impact on your sleep quality.
If you wake up too hot or too cold, which used to be me, like several times a night, I highly recommend you check out Miracle Maid's bed sheets. Miracle Maid sheets are inspired by NASA, by the way, and use silver-infused fabrics that are temperature-regulating so you can sleep at the perfect temp all night long.
Miracle Maid, where have you been? Not only that, they are self-cleaning, so these sheets are infused with the silver that prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth, leaving them to stay cleaner and fresh 3 times longer than other sheets. No more gross odors. Like, that is the grossest odor of all.
And also, stop sleeping on bacteria. These are designed for your skin. Bacteria can clog your pores. It can cause breakouts and cause acne. Sleep clean with Miracle.
One other thing, the comfort and the quality. Miracle sheets are luxuriously comfortable without the high price tag of other luxury brands, and feel as nice, if not nicer, than sheets used by some 5-star hotels.
So upgrade your sleep as the weather heats up. Go to trymiracle.com/TCO to try Miracle Maid sheets today.
And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use the promo code TCO at checkout, you'll get a free 3-piece towel set and save an extra 20%.
Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund.
Fam, upgrade your sleep with Miracle Maid. Go to trymiracle.com/TCO and use code TCO to claim your free 3-piece towel set, which I can't believe I can say, and save over 40% off.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/TCO to treat yourself.
Thank you, Miracle Maid, for sponsoring this episode and keeping us sane in these dog days of summer.
Like, seriously.
Which will come eventually.
Yes. So one day she's on the Doe Network.
I'm scrolling through, looking at missing persons. And I came across this skull in a bucket of cement in Kearney, Missouri. It said it was a male, Caucasian, 50s to 60s. And there wasn't much else there. That was all the information they gave.
A skull was found in a bucket of cement in Kearney, Missouri.
And we see it. We see a picture of it. And it is as creepy and ghoulish as it sounds. It's a skull encased in cement in a bucket.
Yeah. So all we know on the Doe Network is that it's a white male between 50 and 60 years old, about 6 feet tall. But that's it.
Yeah, so we learned it was August 28th, 2001, that the skull in the cement was found at a truck stop. But the cops don't believe that the truck stop is the crime scene. And because this truck stop is off I-35, the sheriff at the time is saying this could have happened anywhere on the I-35 corridor, like anywhere from Canada to Mexico.
Todd from the Doe Network goes, imagine the surprise of that. Todd, yeah. We're not here to have fun. What are we doing here?
You know, and Todd's got to inject a little levity into his work.
It's true.
It's pretty morbid at Todd's
house.
Imagine
the surprise of that. I can imagine it, or I can't imagine it. It's horrifying.
No, the people who invest their time, their free time, by the way, none of them get paid for this, to sift through these cases and live in that darkness all day long, like, God love you.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
One day when the whole West Memphis 3 thing, I'll tell you more about it.
The Doe Network?
No, just like working on cases and going through case files.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, it is. It's, yeah. It's what I spent my whole weekend doing.
Wow.
And it's like, it's just like, it is a lot to be in that world and like find things, and it's a different like pocket of your brain that you have to access in a weird way.
Are you keeping like notes and
the whole thing?
God. You're going to write a book about this someday.
Maybe. So clearly someone was murdered and the killer is trying to hide the body. So that's also what we know.
Yeah. And it's also just the head. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like what happened? So it's like something horrible happened. This is a murder.
Exactly.
So Shannon May is here. She is from Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
This is the town I grew up as a child. It's a small little Midwestern town. People are very friendly. It's a tourist town. It's just about an hour and a half north of Chicago and about 45 minutes south of Milwaukee. So there's a beautiful spring-fed lake. There's lots of activity going on here. It's a quaint little, very friendly neighborhood town.
While she's describing her town, we're seeing like people in trucks doing donuts on a frozen lake.
Yeah.
This is not safe. I don't care how frozen that lake is. That truck weighs 2 tons.
Yeah.
And if you fall through the ice in your truck, you're going to die.
Oh, my God.
A freezing, watery, miserable death.
Is someone going to shove cocaine up your nose while it's happening, too?
I was just telling that story the other day. I fully believed going into middle school that I was going to be injected with cocaine so they would get me.
Oh, We don't know.
We don't know. We don't know. But like, I'm watching these people doing donuts on a frozen lake. This is not safe. Meanwhile, she's talking about how like quaint and cute and adorable her town is. I'm terrified.
She says it was magical. Every day was a new adventure.
Oh, well, her childhood seems also like a nightmare. Her dad would take her fishing and camping and flying kites all the time.
Shannon,
oh my God.
He's making a joke. Means he wouldn't want to do it.
It sounds amazing for you, honey. And I want to meet you. You seem so amazing.
They flew kites. Like, she just had like this great little childhood.
I am at an age now where I want to experience other people's experiences I would really go and spend a weekend with Shannon and go camping. I would really do it. Like, I want to like have experiences that I would never have with people who like love those things.
You can't complain the whole time though.
Part
of the deal is like, if you're going to do it, you got to do it and not make Shannon regret it.
That's very fair.
Right.
While I have your attention, can we talk about Jane Goodall for 5 seconds?
Sure.
This is a total non sequitur, fam. Somebody sent me a TikTok of Jane Goodall talking about working with, you know, she's the one that goes in the woods and studies the chimps and whatever. Somebody asked her, like, let's just say for argument's sake that a 6-foot-tall humanoid species existed somewhere in the basically
Bigfoot.
Saying, like, is Bigfoot real? And she said she would go into the jungles and have conversations with elders from tribes that did not ever see other humans, that had no contact with the outside world. And she, through an interpreter, asked them, have you ever seen a monkey without a tail? Now, they have no context for this because they don't know about, like, pop culture. They don't know what Bigfoot is. All they know is what they know from what they see in the woods, because that's all the life that they have. And she said that through the interpreter, 3 different elders were like, oh, yeah, we've seen that. About 6 feet tall, monkey with no tail.
Couldn't that just be a different kind of primate?
No, they're saying, like, it's what we think of as, like, Bigfoot. Like, like a monkey without a tail is Bigfoot. And they totally exist deep in the forest.
Wow.
Yeah. Jane Goodall says so.
Thanks, Jane. Hooking us up.
Yeah, totally.
So Shannon's dad is Greg. And Greg was a tattoo artist and he owned Greg's Tattoo Shop. And he was awesome at what he did. It came really natural to him. Being a tattoo artist is really fucking hard. And he was just like able to do it.
I can't draw stick people. I don't know how anybody draws anything, let alone uses like a needle pen to do it on your arm.
And then like shading and like dimensions. Like, it's really...
And they're gorgeous. Like tattoos can be beautiful.
Speaking of Bob Ruff, Zach from Truth and Justice is a tattoo artist. That's what he does. That's where him and Bob met.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Shannon is just saying that like he was better at it than anybody else. But like, he also liked to keep his personal life very separate. separate from his work?
Hell yeah, Greg, louder for the people in the back.
I know.
But they said, Shannon says his work was very well recognized. Like, he really made a great name for himself over the years.
Well, what she also says is that at the time, the perception of people in the tattoo world was that it would attract, like, a seedier set of people.
So stupid.
So, like, right, but, like, he didn't want Shannon telling anybody their, like, actual address. He didn't want anybody knowing where they actually live.
And because, like, a lot of people have this image, Greg didn't fit that image.
No.
So he wasn't covered in tattoos.
He was, like, so clean cut.
He actually went so far as to iron his jeans, which I always thought was funny. He would go to the library every day and read the Wall Street Journal. You'd hear the buzzing of the needles in the tattoo shop, and he would have the stock market on the radio.
This guy, I love him. He's cute as hell.
And
I love this guy.
Shannon says he looked like Buddy Holly when he was younger and the Marlboro Man when he got older.
I know. See the pictures, and those are actually very good descriptions, Shannon.
Yeah. He was also,
we'll talk more about it when we go camping.
Yeah. Greg contains multitudes. He's also an avid antique collector.
Yes.
Specifically Civil War weapons. Like, crazy valuable. Like, 200. He had, like, a collection worth 250 grand.
I was a little bit like, okay, I want to...
What side?
I want to right side of history this here. You know what I mean? That, like, is it, like, collecting Civil War antiques is, that's dicey.
Is that, here's a question. Would they say Confederate antiques, like, or would they leave it open?
We understand that, like, the Civil War was about ending slavery, right?
Right.
So, like, it's kind of, I don't know. I just want to make sure that, like you're saying, we're on the right side of history here.
I would hope that maybe they'd say he was a Confederate.
And then we would, like, move on to a different
collector.
Story. Yeah.
Instead of just, like, kind of tricking us with the whole, like, general Civil War vibe.
Exactly. And we don't get any information on that. Let's assume good of Greg.
They said specifically Civil War weapons. I'm going to interpret that.
I know.
As the North.
And while we're in a down moment, Shannon, when I come for camping, I'm not getting in the car and going on the lake. I'm drawing a line.
Shannon, let me remind you, it is your choice.
You don't
to
have
send
to.
This invitation. It's not a subpoena. It's an invitation.
I will go camping. I will fly kites. I'm not getting in a car and going on a frozen lake. I'm not doing that.
That's fine. I think, again,
I have a family.
I don't think anyone's asking you to.
Okay,
I think
great.
You're safe. This is a cocaine-free zone. We're not getting on the ice.
Taylor Swift on the Graham Norton show telling the story about the time that she...
don't want to do that.
No, she would know. It was, she was spending a day with a Rolling Stone interviewer.
Oh,
and she's like,
yes.
I just wanted to be cool. I just wanted to be myself. And twice in one day, she got into a car accident.
Like a fender bender.
And the second time, the writer goes, I've got a family.
I have a family. So good.
Travel. Girl, Steve just got back from his London trip. Golden missed him so much. The way that he jumped all over Steve when Steve walked in the door.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Dogs are the best. Pets are the best. I came back from checking the mail. Fiona acted like I just came home from war after 15 years. Okay? The point is, yeah. We love our pets.
Yes. And funnily enough, today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Get that.
Yeah. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need.
Yeah, the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time.
They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are.
Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. My God, who hasn't experienced that?
Seriously. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account.
So, fam, to explore coverage, visit ASPCAPetInsurance.com/TCO.
That's ASPCAPetInsurance.com/TCO.
Again, that's ASPCAPetInsurance.com/TCO.
This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. So back to Ellen and the donut work.
Yeah.
So she found this case with the skull. She's searching day and night.
I was obsessed with finding this person. Back then, there wasn't any Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. You had to type in state of Iowa missing persons or state of Texas missing persons.
She goes, I was obsessed with finding this missing person. She wants to find out everything she can, not just about this person, but their family too.
Yes.
So we learn that there are always about 80,000 missing person cases in the United States. And remember, those are only reported cases.
Is it just me or did that sound low compared to like statistics we've heard in the past?
Because it's only the reported cases to keep in mind. It's not like, it's not that there are 80,000 missing people. It's that there are 80,000 cases.
Active cases being worse.
Which is a very different, yeah. A very important distinction. So there are possibly up to 40,000 unidentified bodies. And Todd says that is a silent mass disaster.
Yeah, I mean, that is so sad and shocking. 40, like, and the work of the DOE network trying to connect the missing people with the unclaimed bodies.
Yeah.
That is, like, there should be a government agency doing that.
Yeah.
Not closing the Department of Education, doing this.
Doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, just helping people.
In case I wasn't clear.
Keep the Department of Education open for as long as humanly possible.
I and about 90% of Americans agree with you.
I mean, yeah. My best friend is an assistant principal in the New York City public school system, so yeah.
Yeah.
So the remains are usually close to where the person went missing, so that's where Ellen starts, right? She's going to start searching close and works her way out. That's usually what we do in any kind of investigation, whether it's finding a missing person, finding, I'm sorry to say, like the rest of someone's body, or even like when a kid goes missing, you talk to the parents first, work your way out.
Totally.
Like, this is what we're doing.
The
here.
Only difference here is that these remains were found on a truck stop on a very, like, a well-traveled highway.
Right. So,
and we're clearly left there to, like, not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's why we're talking to Ellen, because she's like, she likes the hardest cases. This is a very hard case.
Yep, exactly.
So we're back with Shannon, and Greg, the tattoo artist, was her dad?
Yes.
So she tells us,
my parents separated and divorced in 1977, but they always remained friends. When I was a teenager, we moved to California. When my father came out, every holiday, we would talk on the phone very often.
Everyone was very present in each other's lives.
Yeah. Now we meet Lil Greg.
Lil Greg works with Big Greg.
Is his name really Greg? I love this guy.
Greg Kremser.
Yeah.
What's his name?
He got tattoos from Big Greg, and he became like an apprentice to Big Greg. And then when Big Greg wanted to retire, he was going to sell the store to Lil Greg, and Lil Greg was going to get the money from his dad, but then his dad died.
Right.
And so he calls Big Greg, and he's like, bro, my dad died. I can't buy the store anymore. And like, essentially he says, Big Greg gave Lil Greg the store. Now, he's standing next to Shannon when he's telling us the story. And I was like, that's a sweet story. He took care of Shannon, too, though, right?
Yeah, I think because this guy, like, Big Greg taught Lil Greg, like, the ropes of the shop.
Yeah.
And then Big Greg was like, you know what? You do you. Take care of your family. Like, we'll figure something out when you're ready.
And then eventually gives him the store. I just want to know that, like, Shannon gets to share in the profits.
I'm sure Shannon was like, I'm fine not running a tattoo shop.
Totally. I guess
you kind of need to be into the scene.
I guess that's
true. Or at least know how to, I don't know.
I looked at the look on Shannon's face when he's like, he just gave me the store.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, that was her inheritance, but okay.
I'm sure. I think Shannon's
You think
fine.
She's okay?
I think she's totally
She'll
fine.
Tell me when we go camping.
Again, Shannon, your choice.
Okay.
So Greg May, who we're talking about here, retired at 54 years old. He worked super hard his whole life. He was able to retire at a very young age.
54?
54 is like nothing.
Nothing.
And he settled
it's
down.
Right around the corner for this one.
No. He settled down in Bellevue, Iowa, right across the Mississippi River.
Where we get to meet Chief of Police Dennis Schroeder. I love this guy.
Yeah, he's been here for 31 years. He started as a patrolman, worked his way up.
He invented a name for Bellevue. He calls it a bedroom community. I'm just kidding. He didn't.
I was like, what?
But he goes, I have a name for what we call
oh,
Bellevue. He's
yeah.
like, I call it like a bedroom community.
Oh, God.
I was
Dennis,
like,
girl.
Chief Dennis, you didn't make
Dennis.
It up.
Now, from Chief Dennis, we have to talk about Moose. Moose. Is this guy Doug, but Shannon only ever knew him as Moose.
For people of a certain age, I'm sure you're all thinking the same thing. To us, Moose only exists and you can't do that on television.
Oh.
Do you remember Moose and Alistair and Lannis?
I remember Alanis Morris.
Alanis.
I remember you can't say I don't know because he'll
yeah,
get slimed.
You can't go to Barf because he's all the hamburger. But like Moose's real name was Christine, but they called her Moose.
What does she look like?
She was just like a cute girl. Like she's just like blonde, you know, like blonde little Bob or whatever. But when they said Moose 1,000 times and all I could think of was you can't do that on television.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this Moose sucks.
He sucks. He's a big guy.
He was just always a guy that was at the shop or my dad would go and have maybe a beer with him afterwards. Eventually, after Moose hanging around the tattoo shop for a while, my father, you know, eventually took him under his wing. He offered to show him how to tattoo so that he could have a trade. So as time went on, they did develop some sort of a friendship.
Greg is sort of taking Moose under his wing.
Based on the one picture we see of Moose, he looks like a mean old bastard.
I know.
Looks like a real piece of shit.
He's the guy that would apply for the mall Santa job and not get it.
Oh my God.
Not get
Gross.
It.
Gross.
I know.
Gross. So, yeah.
Not like this guy. I'm a shoo-in for that job.
Yeah.
I'd get it. Oh.
Do they still do it?
Oh.
What?
Oh.
What did I do?
I wasn't expecting you to agree so quickly that I'd make a perfect mall Santa. What about me?
Because you would be excited to see all the kids.
Okay.
Because you wanted to do it. Oh, okay. Stop. You were excited about something. So I said, yeah, you'd be great.
You don't have to yes and everything.
Well.
Oh, my God.
So this Doug Moose guy is always at the tattoo shop.
Yeah.
He and Greg developed this friendship. And Greg, like, teaches him how to do tattoos, which, again, is not easy.
And he says, Shannon says he taught him how to do it so he would have a trade. Like, he's really trying to help this guy.
Right. And then, even more so, Greg lets Moose crash in his basement until he can get on his feet. Like, Greg is really helping this guy out, really going out on a limb for this.
Yeah.
Shit.
And Detective Dennis, who's like the chief of police of Bellevue at this point, he's like, Greg and Moose, they stuck out a little bit when they first moved to town, so he checked him out.
Yeah.
But Detective Dennis says they seem like good buds.
Yeah.
He said they reminded me of me and my friends when we get together. You know, buds.
Wow.
And I was wondering if this was going to a gay place. It's not.
It's not. Because we meet Jan, and I love Jan. Jan is Greg's at the time. She was his girlfriend.
She is the embodiment of like, chill. You know, some people have,
she's
like, no
so
chill.
Sweet.
She is the embodiment of chill. She loved her. They met at a bar one night. Like,
she, like, breaks my heart, Jan. I love her.
I know. I know. He asked if he could buy her a drink. She's like, sure. And then, like, bada bing, bada boom, they're in a relationship.
And Greg really loved Bellevue, but he hated the winter, and he wanted to move to Florida with Jan to start a new life. And she was like, I was really happy that he asked.
Let me say, the way, Tom, can we hear this? The way this question, she goes,
yeah, Greg loved it here, but he hated the winter time. He hated being cold, and he wanted to move down to Florida. And he asked me if I wanted to go, and I said, sure.
I said, sure.
Yeah, and but, like, I guess they ask her, like, what? How did that make you feel? And she so sweetly goes, I was happy that Greg asked me. I was ready to go.
I know. And I just love that, like, she goes, I said, sure.
Oh, Jan.
I know.
So back with Ellen Leach researching the skull case. She's working like crazy. She's narrowing it down. It is consuming her.
And she says with these hard cases, she can usually narrow it down to two or three possibilities. That is incredible.
And husband Chip is like, she'd wake up in the middle of the night with ideas. She had a notebook next to her bed. I mean, this was really, it's all she thought about.
It's her life.
So she finds a missing person that she thinks could be the match for the skull. It's the right age.
Yeah.
Went missing right before the skull was found. And this person's in Chicago, which is like 450 miles away. It's a stretch, but maybe.
It still falls under her 500 miles max. And she said the timing was right. He went missing right before the remains were found. I thought you'd like this. It seemed like he could be it could be a mob hit.
And I was like, Chicago? I don't know. Maybe. You know, we'll see. It's no Vegas, but sure.
I know. Yeah.
So here's how the Doe Network works. Each state has an admin. And if you have a possible match, you have to turn it to the admin first, and then they vet it before passing it along to law enforcement.
Now, I think that this is probably a good policy. It sucks because it's like Ellen should be the admin for wherever she is.
She's like not into the gatekeeping.
No.
And like, she's like, well, I did all the work, so why is this admin who doesn't know the case the way I do making a decision for me? She lives and breathes these cases.
Because Ellen is the rare unicorn where I feel like the admins are probably dealing with like 20 a day of somebody who looked at it for 5 minutes. They're like, it's probably this guy.
Right. And so I understand what Ellen's saying to be like, right, but this is like, this has been my life. Ask Chip.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Seriously.
Well, right. And so Todd from the Doe Network is like,
and there's hundreds, maybe thousands of cyber sleuths out there that have theories, and that can become deafening. That can actually become overwhelming for law enforcement. And Ellen was not 100% happy with this because she felt like she should have more direct contact with law enforcement.
They need to have these apps. Like, I get it.
Vetting them. I do.
And I also understand the frustration, especially when you've put in like the 90 hours of your spare free time.
Right. To just hear like, we'll get back to you. She's like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Travel down the road and back again.
Girl, Helix is back. Can I tell you, we had guests stay with us last weekend and all they did was rave and rave and rave about how much sleep they got and how much they loved sleeping in our bed. And I got to say, it's our Helix mattress. They've been with us for forever now.
Yeah, I love the Helix mattress because I used to be a very bad sleeper.
Yes.
Through no fault of my own.
Of course.
Turns out I was blaming myself. It was the mattress.
Yeah.
So now that we have our Helix Midnight Lux,
yes,
it works for me. It works for Mike. It works for Fiona the pup. She loves it. And it's like, at first you're like, well, there's no way all of us are going to be happy with one mattress. Wrong.
No, because what Helix does is you have that 2-minute sleep quiz where you like put in your preferences and what you like and how you sleep and your partner, and even you can do it for your dog. And then they tell you the exact right mattress for you. They send it right to your door. It could not be any easier or more convenient.
It's true. And the thing is, when you have a bad night's sleep, you're going to probably have a bad next day.
Yes.
It's kind of a day ruiner.
Yeah, 100%. It was so affirming to have our guests, like the first thing they said was what a comfortable night's sleep they had.
It's true.
And they said that they always wake up in in the middle of the night, but they did not in our bed.
There you go.
I know, right?
Yeah, and getting a good mattress can really help. Like, everyone has their own specific sleep issues.
Yeah.
So it can help with, like, snoring, back pain, sleep apnea, or just sleeping through the night or sleeping too hot. Like,
yeah.
Getting your mattress is going to change your life.
100%. So, fam, get in on the Helix mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/TCO for 27% off site-wide.
That's helixsleep.com/TCO for 27% off site-wide.
Do it!
helixsleep.com/TCO. So back to Shannon and her dad, Greg. We see where this is going, right, everybody?
Right.
So Shannon is now living in California with her mother, and Greg would visit every Christmas, and everyone was still friends and happy and talked all the time.
It's Christmas 2001, and he was, like, not going to come out for the holidays this year because they were so close to moving to Florida. Like, they were moving right then. So he was like, let me go to Florida and get settled, and then I can come out and, like, stay longer.
Yeah, and then, like, he and Jan would come visit. Like, that was the plan. Everyone was in on the plan.
Yes.
So it's January 11th, 2001. Jan was away for the holidays, but she comes back to Bellevue. And she goes to Greg's house. Oh, my God. This, like, made me so sad.
It's crazy.
She shows up to Greg's house, and the door is locked. Jan says she sees Greg in the chair in the living room, but he's, like, not... He's ignoring her completely and not answering the door.
Hey, like, I don't... Maybe he was asleep or something?
Or
but
it was,
like,
not... It was not Greg.
Oh, right, right. So because it's 2001, she doesn't have a cell phone. She goes down to the local bar and she calls and gets the answering machine. She goes back up to the house. She's banging on the door again. He doesn't answer. And, like, she says it was freezing out. It was 20 below zero. She's like, I'm going to go home. We'll figure this out tomorrow. But she says she was hurt.
She goes, I was really hurt. I don't know why he would do that
to me.
Yeah,
like, why he would just ignore me
like
that.
And it's like, they had all these plans and then he ghosts her in this really cruel way. Like, my heart just broke for Jan in that moment because it's so confusing.
Yes.
And it's so like, wait, you just feel crazy. But then, like, eventually the sadness has to come in too. So, like, you have this moment. It's just hard.
But then on January 14th, so 3 days later, Shannon calls her dad and some weird woman answers. And
Julie.
At first, Shannon thinks she's called the wrong number. She's like, who is this?
Yeah.
She said, this is Julie. And I said, this is Greg's daughter, Shannon. Is he there? And she said, no. Oh, this is Julie, Moose's girlfriend. He said, well, he's called me a couple of times. I don't want him to think I'm not calling him back. Will you please let him know I called? She said, well, he's gone to Chicago for the day. Yeah, I'll let him know.
He's gone to Chicago for the day, but I'll tell him.
Chicago.
Chicago.
Where did we just hear Chicago?
I know.
Oh,
exactly.
With Ellen and the Dough Network. So 3 days go by. No one hears from Greg. Shannon calls her brother and she's like, something's wrong. Like,
yes.
I know something's wrong.
Yes.
Because everyone says, like, Greg was organized and he also was, like, in touch with everyone.
Yep.
Jan, he had a girlfriend. Like, this is all very, very weird.
So the brother calls the dad's house and the phone has been turned off.
Lots of alarm bells now.
I mean, that is absolutely terrifying.
Right?
Yeah.
So they get in touch with Gary, who's a friend. And they're like, Gary, look, we're here in California. Can you just go by the house and, like, see what the hell is going on? We need, like, boots on the ground there in Bellevue.
Gary goes, he calls him back. They're like, he's like, girl, the house is empty. Greg's car is gone. And at this point, the brother, Shannon's brother, calls the cops.
Right. And Shannon and her brother go down to Bellevue themselves.
Yeah.
This is too scary. This is too big.
And Detective Dennis goes and does a welfare check. A neighbor eventually comes forward saying that, like, this neighbor saw Moose and the girlfriend moving things out of the house that looked like antiques. Remember, Greg had that, like, $250,000 value of, like, the Civil War antiques,
right?
Probably, hopefully, on the good side of history.
Right.
And the Moose and the girlfriend are loading this into a cargo van, and the neighbor thought this was suspicious, so they go to the cops.
And, like, now the question is, like, would Moose hurt Greg? Like,
right.
Greg was letting him sleep in his basement and
he
teaching
so
him how to tattoo. There's no movement on any bank statements. No sign of Greg anywhere. The antiques are gone. He totally ghosted Jan. He's ignoring his kids. Like,
but
what's
Shannon's
happening?
Shannon's like, Moose wouldn't hurt my dad. Like, they were good friends.
So the cops call in the DCI, the Division for Criminal Investigation, because as Dennis says, our little 5-person police force can't handle this. This is too big of a
good
job.
Good thinking, Dennis. Well done, girl.
And Shannon's like, okay, who's listening to me? Because I have tons of stuff to tell you about Moose. Like, she tells them everything she knows, everything about Moose, this girlfriend she didn't know, and her answering the phone, and Jan, and the plans to go to Florida. Like, absolutely everything just to get to the bottom of this. And Shannon, she explains what it's like to be in her position so well, because she's like, I don't want to leave. Like, my life is in California, but I don't want to leave. She goes, you want to feel like you're doing something.
We've seen this a bunch of times. Like, I remember, like, that 1 minute where I lost Daisy on the beach in Hawaii when we were on vacation, and I was like, I live here now.
Yeah.
Like, if I don't find her today, I'm buying that house right there.
And she says, like, she'll go to, like, you know, for example, like the CVS, and she'll see someone, and she's like, how can they just live their life every day like it's normal when it's not normal anymore?
Yeah.
So it's it's so hard. I'd like to live like that for months until this like kind of break in the case comes up.
Yeah, months go by with nothing. And then Shannon says a friend after several months like called me and said, I got a flyer in the mail for a place called Rock Island Auction House.
And he come across this catalog that had a bunch of antiques that was getting sold in Rock Island, Illinois. And he told Greg's kids that these gotta be Greg's stuff. There's no way there's two separate items like this, collections that Greg has, somebody else has the same collection.
Had to have belonged to Greg.
Yeah.
And so the cops go to the auction house to see how this auction house got these items. And they meet a woman named Mary Clark.
Yeah.
And she listed the items. Guess who she is?
She's Moose's girlfriend's mother.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
You guys are so stupid.
They're so stupid.
So stupid.
So Moose and the girlfriend are now in Arizona and the cops head there.
Yes.
And Greg's antiques are all over the place. And they're like, wait, why are you here? Why are the antiques here? How did they get here? What's the plan? And where is Greg? So we meet John Keyes, who's the county attorney in Jackson County, and the police chief calls him about the Greg May case.
Yeah, and he says, Dennis, the police chief, he's like, he wouldn't call me about nothing. I knew this had to be kind of a big deal.
So in Arizona, Moose and his girlfriend are arrested for theft.
I love that we both are calling him by his real name,
Doug.
Moose. I know.
Piece of shit, Doug.
Moose. That's like a horrible nickname. That's the kind of nickname I would have had in high school.
But like, you get one look at this guy and you're like, oh, you're like a bad.
And
like
it's
a
like, what did
bastard.
The Moose do to you? Like, yeah. Moose are great.
Usually.
Right?
Not today.
They're kind.
Not today, they're not.
No. Although, if I'm like, if Shannon and I are camping and we encounter a moose, I'm going to be scared. I'm letting Shannon take charge.
They're huge. Yeah. They have the big antlers. Yeah, I would stay away from them.
And I'm going to stand behind Shannon. She's going to know what to do.
Yeah.
She's going to put
Shannon,
me in a truck.
If you choose to extend the invitation. Like I said, not a subpoena, just an invite. So these idiots play dumb. And it's like, that seems impossible. You have all this stuff. Julie's mother puts it up for adoption. You can't suddenly act like you don't know who Greg is.
Exactly.
Fucking idiots.
And even better, when the authorities searched the trailer.
There was a green jacket that belonged to Moose and there was a spot of blood on there. So they did a reverse DNA search with my brother and I, where they swabbed our cheeks and they sort of do the DNA in reverse to say, from the children to the parent. To see if it belonged to him.
And through DNA analysis, the blood was determined to be Gregory May's.
The blood is determined to be Greg's. Like, there's Greg's blood on a jacket in their trailer in Arizona.
And it's the bad guy's jacket. It's Doug's jacket,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But they also get DNA from Shannon and her brother to test it to see if it's Greg's DNA. And like, yes, it does.
And we get another monologue from Shannon about like how awful it is to have been living on hold. Like when a person is missing, we hear this all the time. You at least have the hope that they're out there somewhere. Maybe there's a possibility they'll be found. But like when you get this call about the blood on the jacket, Shannon's like, the hope was gone. Like that's it. We know he's dead.
She says when someone you love has been missing for a long time, you live on hope and fear.
Yes.
Ugh,
yes.
Shannon.
You know, and I don't know. I can only speak for myself. I don't think I could live like that forever. Like I would need to know one way or the
other.
Of
course.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So we know they killed Greg, right? Like we can't prove it in a court of law just yet, but we know they killed Greg. But it's like, well, how and when and why and where is Greg?
And like DA John is like, we knew they killed this guy. But like he literally says, and I quote, there are so many places to hide a body. Like what he's saying is that from his perspective, it's really, really hard and unlikely to prosecute anybody for murder if you don't have a body. We got to get, he is right. There are too many places to hide a body for that to be the policy.
It's true.
You know?
So speaking of, though, back with Ellen and the Doe Network, her research is telling her that the skull belongs to this, like, mob guy in Chicago.
Yeah, she's not right.
She's told by the gatekeepers that she's wrong.
It's not that.
It's not a good match.
And so, she says, like, this is a big blow. She's been working tirelessly on this. She thought she knew it for sure. In her head, she'd made up a story that it was a mob hit. She knew it. You know what I mean?
And she's disheartened. And at first, she's like, well, fuck it. Like, I'm going to back away from the case. But then she's like, Ellen, no.
Yeah.
So she like, takes a deep breath. And she's like, no, now I'm really going to get to the bottom of it. You're telling me that's not the match? I'm going to find the match.
But not until after she and Chip go blow off some steam at the local casino.
Well.
They love it.
But I love this, though. So they go, and they're, like, trying to find some joy wherever they can find it. Look, if you know, you know. We're living in this world.
Absolutely.
Like, you find the joy.
Yeah.
But Ellen says,
with all the sadness going on, there's still life out there. There's still happiness out there. Being at the casino reminds me that you never know when your luck is going to come in.
You never know when your luck is going to come
in.
Oh, that gave me chills.
I have only been to casinos twice.
Okay.
I have never had a good time. Oh, you like casinos.
I... enjoyed. I know how to do Vegas right is the difference. A couple days, 2-3 days, go to the great restaurants, get off the strip if you can. But yeah, and go with a plan.
They're smoky. I didn't spend much money, but like I don't know how to play. I'm never going to win.
Yeah, the first time I went, her name was Helen. I asked a craps dealer. I was like, I don't know how to play craps. No one was there. And I just asked, she was an empty table. And I was like, can you just teach? Like Mike and I went up and she was like, can you teach me? And like, then suddenly, beginner's luck. There's like a table full of men. Like also, I won a lot of money for a lot of people and nobody gave me anything.
Are you serious? Yeah, nobody tossed you a chip?
These guys, they gave me, well, not enough for what I...
For what you earned?
For really what I earned. And it was just like crazy beginner's luck. But they tell you, you know, like I wanted to, there are a lot of rules of like when you can touch the table or how you can touch the table. So to try to like, I overcorrected and I went to like put my hands behind my back to be like, I'm not. And they were like, no.
You're a card counter.
Oh, and I was like, oh, it's just the, okay. So it's like one hand, hands where my eyes can see them. But it's like, if you ask, they'll teach you.
Yeah. All right. That's good to know.
Last time we were there, we were playing blackjack and the dealer was like happy. I thought the dealer would be like not helping or not teaching you anything.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, no, this is when you want. It was like a special kind of blackjack. It wasn't regular.
Oh, wow.
So if you ask, like if you go there curious and say like, what's the deal? What do I do?
I keep telling Steve, I want Steve and me to do 3 nights in Vegas. That's what I want.
If you do it right, if you like, there's like good restaurants
and shows and like.
And the hotels smell so good.
Yeah.
And it's really walkable.
There's lots of fun gays in Vegas as well.
Major. Go to the Flamingo and see Drag Race.
Oh my God.
Mike
that's
and I
a dream.
Went. It yeah, was so yeah, yeah. fun. All we right, saw Vegas, amazing queens.
I'm coming back for you, girl. I'm coming back.
If you do it right, it'll be great. If you fuck it up. Good luck and don't fuck it
good
up for
luck
real.
And don't fuck
for,
it up.
For real. So a few months later.
On my tombstone that weekend, like when I send the body home, it's going to say he fucked it up.
And let me tell you, though, really, it's like no joke. I'm not being funny. You have to stay hydrated.
Oh, yeah.
Because you think that like, oh, it's a dry heat. Let me tell you.
I know.
It's really, be careful and don't go in August, which is the last time we were there.
Okay, great. Travel. Fam, this episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack sponsor. IQBar is the better-for-you plant protein-based snacks made with brain-boosting nutrients to refuel, nourish, and satisfy hunger without the sugar crash.
Yeah, I love these things.
Same.
I am like one of those like really stereotypical commercials where I'm like, I'm kind of feeling sluggish and grumpy,
yes.
And then I have an IQBar.
Yes.
Like, I don't know, the chocolate sea salt or maybe the banana nut or the toasted coconut chip, and I just feel like, oh, okay, that did it.
Well, let me tell you why, because IQBar's plant protein bars are packed with high-quality ingredients to help keep you physically and mentally fit. They are also free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners for a natural anytime snack.
Yeah, and with over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are starting their days on the right foot with IQBar's brain and body-boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees.
Including me, girl. The mushroom coffee is not messing around.
I know.
It is so good.
It is legit. I used to not be a coffee person, and then I'm like, wait, what?
And listen, fam, right now, IQBar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQBar products, plus get free shipping.
To get your 20% off, text TCO to 64,000.
Text TCO to 64,000.
That's TCO to 64,000.
Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
Details, even.
But get the mushroom coffee in the bar and the hydration mix.
I mean...
Delish.
Yeah. Have a good day.
Okay.
And you will with IQBars.
She said have a good day.
You know, I'm not saying like, and good day. I'm saying like, wow, you'll be like nourished. So a few months later, there's an update in the case of the skull in the cement, and they do a facial reconstruction. I have to tell you, it's not even close to the worst one we've seen.
No.
It's actually very good.
It actually kind of looks like Greg. It really does.
It's very well done.
Yeah.
And we've seen horrible.
We've seen really bad, made out of clay, like really bad.
Like, and these are great.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, the bad guys, this moose guy and his girlfriend have just been arrested from earlier, right?
Yeah.
We mentioned it. So this goes down exactly how the authorities think it's going to go down. They say that Greg gave them all of the antiques out of the goodness of his heart and that he bailed and he skipped town and they have no idea where he is, but they do know 100% he's totally alive.
And you can't prove that he's not because you don't have his body.
Right. And also, but he totally just ghosted Jan and all of their plans and just handed over the antiques to them to sell them at auction? Like, no.
No, but they, at first they can't hold these guys, but then they realize Moose is in violation of his parole for a previous weapons charge in Wisconsin. So he's extradited back. He's in prison. Julie returns to Iowa to be charged with theft.
Yeah.
So they do get to hold them while they work on the case. Because D.A. John is like, look, starting a murder case without a body sets you back in two ways. He says, usually you can tell a jury, A, there was a death, and B, the circumstances indicate that it was a murder because we got the body and here it
right,
is.
Right, right.
But without a body, he's like,
here we had to start by convincing the jury that there was a death in the first place without a body and that the death was wrongful. And then we had to begin with where you normally start, trying to prove that Douglas De Bruin was the murderer.
And if there was a death, that the death was wrongful. So, like, I understand what he's saying, but, like, it's like, all of the evidence is here. He gave away his $250,000. He ghosted his girlfriend. He hasn't talked to his kids.
It's, like, very clear. But they're like, yeah. No, Julian, I hear you. But, like, in a courtroom.
I know.
They want the conviction. So this absolutely sucks.
This is horrendous. I don't think I've ever seen anything this extreme.
But they say that in order to get to the bottom of this, they give Julie, the girlfriend, immunity. Because they, as I know it sucks,
I know it sucks.
they are telling us that it's kind of, they think it's the only way to get a conviction and to find the truth about what happened to Greg.
Like, they give her full immunity for murdering Greg.
Yeah. And the ink isn't even dry on the paper. She's like, but he did it. Moose did it.
Yeah.
Doug did it.
So she admits that Moose killed him. She says it was strangulation. She admitted for being present when it happened and going with him to dispose of the remains. Now, anybody who's listened to more than one episode of this podcast knows when you get an immunity deal, that shit is off the table if you lie.
Because now this is where we have a problem.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Julie says the remains were put into the Mississippi River. There's no way that's true because the ice is way too thick. We have the records to prove it. Julie's story that she got in exchange for immunity is impossible.
It's a lie. And I don't understand. We'll get there at the end when we get there. But like, she doesn't get in enough trouble for this lie, is all I'm saying. Because in any other case, it's like you lose your entire immunity deal.
Right. And now still, they're like, we want to move forward with the arrest warrant. We want to get to the bottom of this case. So they are trying to get the case ready for trial. So to be clear, the DA isn't happy about any of this.
Right.
Like, they know the case is not a great one.
Yes.
This is all they have, but they're trying their best for Greg and his family. That's it.
And Shannon tells us in Iowa, they'd never had a conviction without a body. So if that happens, this would be unprecedented.
And it's just like, why would the killer do this? Like,
I know.
Greg did so much for this guy.
Oh, I know.
Like, they were friends. He taught him how to be a tattoo artist. Like, it's not just that he gave him a job. He was, like, teaching him something, let him crash in his basement. Like, I just don't understand.
It's hard. I mean, it all just comes down to greed and money and whatever else. And we're back to Ellen, and she's saying, like, remember, there's a reconstruction now. We've got, like, an actual bust of a head
which
of what they think he looked
good,
like.
And we've seen a lot.
And I don't know how they say all they had was the skull. I don't know how they can tell, like, how chunky the face was based on the skull, but they do. And Ellen says,
I was looking at the face, and I had seen it before, but I couldn't remember where. So I had to go through all the sites again. Probably 150 sites to find out where I had seen this man before.
She had seen that face before, but she couldn't remember where.
She's like, how do I know that face?
So she's like, she has to start from the beginning. Somebody describes Ellen as a human facial reconstruction software.
She basically works backwards. She looks at every single website she's ever looked at before.
Yeah.
She says like 150 sites. She's chasing this guy's face.
It's unbelievable.
It's December 2004. She comes across the Iowa Missing Person Clearinghouse. She finds the photo she was looking for.
Yes.
That person is Greg May.
Yeah, she sees the picture. And it's kind of crazy when you see the picture, you're like, yeah, that does look just like the reconstruction.
Now, Ellen knows him as John Doe, the John Doe she's been looking for,
yes,
the skull.
Yes,
this,
yes.
Like, got tears in my eyes.
She's the connector.
Ellen thinks she's identified Gregory May's remains. And meanwhile, the DA in Iowa is banging his head against the wall trying to get this case.
Now, what we're trying to say here is, because somebody's going to say later, without a body, it's really hard to prosecute Moose and Julie. And separately, Ellen is trying to identify this body.
Right.
What somebody says later so perfectly, these internet sleuths are often working against a clock they don't even know is
right.
ticking.
Because this is happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
The DA is saying, what the hell? This case sucks.
Right.
I need something. What can I do?
And
meanwhile, Ellen is piecing it all together for the DA to make this case happen.
And they're not connected. And the DA says at some point in the case, Moose and his team asked for an extension and they're really pissed off about that. But we learn now that if this extension hadn't been granted, Ellen and her solving of the Greg body would not have gotten into this case in time to be used in court.
So, yeah, because what happens is Ellen goes to the Iowa gatekeeper.
Yes.
Who has to, like, approve it.
Yes,
so
yes.
She says, I think I have a match for Gregory May. So, oh my God, I have chills. So she goes, I push send and I waited. Meanwhile, the case is happening. We're in the courtroom. And this is when the killer's lawyer asks for a delay because
yes.
Now that Julie flipped on the client, they need more time to work the case.
Yes.
And this is when the prosecution is pissed and annoyed and confused.
Yes.
Because they don't know what the hell's going on, but it works in their favor.
Yes.
Because what did Ellen say before everybody? Being at the casino reminded her that you never know when your luck's going to come in.
Exactly.
And here we are. Yeah. Can you stand it? I'm going to sob.
It's just kind of like, I don't know if we're even making it clear enough that, like, because the case stalled, the gatekeeper in Iowa was able to be like, wait a second. They're prosecuting the Greg May case right now. And we've just found Greg May's body thanks to Ellen.
Yeah.
And the gatekeepers are able to, like, give this information to the DA, and now the DA's got the body and they can prosecute it and get these fucking people.
Everyone's luck came in, and that's not to discount all the incredibly hard work that Ellen did, because
yes.
She worked incredibly hard.
Totally.
So it's March 2005, 3 months after Ellen sends her research showing that this John Doe is most likely Gregory May.
Yes.
Finally, in March 2005, 3 months after I had made the submission, area director from Iowa got back with me. She told me it was a positive match. And I just kind of melted. That was my first match.
It's a match.
Yes.
And this means that Ellen's research can be sent to law enforcement. And it's Ellen's first match. She finally did it. This proves that Gregory May was dead and that the death was wrongful. And this is exactly
Huge.
What the prosecutor needs.
Exactly.
And this is when Todd from the Doe Network says, so often the cyber sleuths are in a race against time that they don't even know about.
Exactly.
It's like, oh my God.
Because
chills.
If Ellen had, like, waited another 3 months and figured it out later, it would be too late. Because if they had prosecuted the case without a body and Moose and Julie had gotten off, double jeopardy means they can't be retried, even though now we've got the body.
Right. And we don't have a motive. We'll never have a motive. We'll never know exactly what happened.
I mean,
what
they killed him for the antiques.
Right.
You know?
But, like,
I know.
It's so horrifying. So the trial lasted almost exactly 2 weeks. The killer is found guilty of first-degree murder.
He showed no remorse. This is the guy that gave you a place to live, gave you a job, was just trying to fucking help you.
Yep. Let you crash in his basement.
Yeah.
I'm sure it wasn't fun for him.
No.
That picture of that guy,
you
can tell he stinks and he's mean.
100%.
So he's sentenced to life without parole for the murder of Gregory May.
Yeah.
Julie, the girlfriend, was lying her face off about the remains were.
But, like, it's
about where the remains were.
It's so crazy to me that, like, she gets 5 years, the maximum for perjury, but, like, she doesn't lose her immunity deal for lying. I don't get it.
She was released in 2011.
Yeah.
Her mother, by the way, who was, like, allowing the antiques to be sold.
Oh, yeah.
Under her name, authorities never charged her in connection with the theft and murder.
I know. It's insane.
So she was removed enough that it was like, oh, my daughter gave me, and, like, any lawyer would say, like, she didn't know anything. Her daughter gave her the antiques.
And it's possible that that's true, I guess.
Yeah. But Shannon, you know, we're back with Shannon, and she just says she tries to live the life her father can't live, and she doesn't give her thoughts or time or energy to the killers. Good for you, Shannon. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and, like, we get this round robin of everybody talking about what a hero Ellen is.
Here comes along an amateur sleuth on her time off, not getting paid for it, just wanting to help. She pieces together the key that held this case, the key that made this case, and got justice for me and my family.
And D.A. John writes her a letter, and the letter is, like, so meaningful. Like, these people do this work for free.
I know.
And oftentimes it comes to nothing.
Yeah, or there's just brick wall after brick wall.
Yeah.
Like, what if, at first, Ellen was like, she wanted to disassociate from the case. What if she walked away from it?
Right.
We wouldn't be here.
I know, right.
Like, she was so disheartened by, because you work weeks and months and, like, all of her free time staying up nights and whatever, and then to just be told, like, nope.
They should deputize her. Like, people like her should, like, get a job where they can do this work and get paid for
it. Yeah, and Jan, his girlfriend, says, like, she really misses him. She goes, I was really looking forward to spending the rest of my life with Greg.
In Florida!
Jan! And so, like, you know, this guy, John Keyes, the prosecutor, when he writes that letter to Ellen, who reads it to us,
yeah.
I want to personally thank you for your efforts to match the remains of Gregory May in the murder investigation of the killer. And he thanks her and, like, all the volunteers out there in the world who are doing this. And, like, the letter really means so much. And she goes, if it ends with, like, everyone should feel, like, motivated and inspired because it says, like, anybody can do this if they put their time, energy, and heart into it. And it's true.
Yeah.
Like, this is why the show is so good, because you can see, like, what would have happened if you gave up? Like, there's always something else. Like, your luck is always going to change.
Totally.
Go to the casino, put it all on black, and let's go get them.
Oh, my my God, girl, we did Web of Death, Body of Evidence.
Not to be confused with the 1993 Madonna sexy thriller.
Yeah. Shannon, you can just reach out to me right through the website. We'll figure out a good weekend for everybody for me to come out to.
Or don't, Shannon. Choice is yours, girl. You can just have like a nice little you time weekend. Just like a little Shannon time.
Yeah. Or we could go camping.
Or you can ignore us completely. Or you can continue living your life, Shannon.
We love you. Fam, join the Facebook group, True Crime Obsessed Podcast, the Sarah Stern group. Find us over on the Patreon.
Yep. We love you so much. Stay safe out there.
Yeah.
And we'll see you very, very soon. I hope you're liking these bonus episodes.
I know, me too.
Yeah.
Bye, bye, bye.
Bye, bye.
Oh, did we harmonize?
Barely. I had a frog in my throat. It was not good.